Thomas Paine podcast for a special edition. I guess you might call it a special treat, whatever you want to call it. It's meant to help enlighten you and broaden your intellectual horizons in a challenging time. And we ease into it here. This was a broadcast we did just a couple days ago, and the highest level we have on Paine.tv, it's Hotwire. And we're going to be bringing the heat. Of course, we've been bringing the heat. And that's where we can say things that that's our safe space, I guess we could say. Away from social media where everything is scrutinized and they'll come down on the back of your head, etc. And so we can introduce folks on Hotwire and a lot of high-level intelligence and things that would definitely get you kicked off of social media. What's the point of that? I mean, we have other things to do. We can't play cat and mouse with those billionaires. We don't have the guns for that. So we created our own system. If people want to check in on Hotwire, they're going to get high-level intelligence. They use it to shape their own lives, etc. And that of the folks that they care about and they love. And it's a hell of a tool to outsmart and try to at least keep ahead of the hive mind by several steps. So we do that in a number of different ways. High-level intelligence, high-intelligence level people. It's probably not grammatically correct, but you get the point. There's nothing like professing your intelligence and then fumbling your way through the English language. But, tonight we're going to be talking about some great pretenders out there. And it also morphs into a very interesting situation because everybody's looking for some clarity on when this is going to end. When is all this COVID-19 and all this insanity we have to deal with on a regular basis for the last 2+ years now? When's it going to end? And people are looking at like Fauci for answers. Well, if it's up to Fauci, it'll never end. He's loving it. But we may see a backdoor solution here as the insurance companies are getting clobbered with death claims and health claims too, of course. And so they're getting hit and many other things, getting hit from many other areas too. So far, the insurance companies, the actuaries, are the ones really carrying the liability. They're really feeling the pain based on everything that's going on out here. And there's starting to be major pushback as the more than rumors now start to circle that insurance companies taking a real close look at these death claims. And if you've had your jabs, well, they just may not pay. And so what we have is a battle of the titans lining up here. Big pharma against big insurance. I don't know. I think I'm going to side on the... I'm going with big insurance on this one. Yeah, if you have to back one corporate conglomerate, it might as well be big insurance. I mean, even if it's a battle of David and Goliath, I can't get behind Big Pharma. So we bring out voices and folks who are very bright. Edward Dowd is no exception. A guy who spent a lot of time on Wall Street, continues to be involved in the market. And guys like this are credited with being able to predict the future. Of course, it's easy. All you have to do is work 19 hours a day for several decades. And you too can predict the future. And so he has some interesting perspectives that dovetail with the things we've been reporting on the Paine.tv, on the Thomas Paine podcast, and on Hotwire, etc., about these great pretenders. And those folks are the mRNA stocks, specifically Moderna, specifically Pfizer, and specifically BioNTech. And so we're going to talk about that. Now, just as a heads up, we recorded this last week on Friday, and then we cut it loose to our folks on Sunday night. And there have been a few winds of change since then. As you know, the market can move very fast. Pfizer continues a downward spiral. Moderna continues a downward spiral. I want to focus primarily on those two since they are as U.S. concerns primarily. Now, Pfizer, of course, is more diversified. Moderna is a one-trick pony. Moderna really has my attention because of its slide has been epic. And the word is out in Wall Street, as Mr. Dad will tell you. And so you're going to hear different perspectives that you don't hear in other media. Now, perhaps that'll change. I think maybe Ed will end up being on other shows and getting more word out. And a lot of hedge fund managers are reaching out to him. I've had folks that I know that I would sitting down with here and talking to them say, hey, this thing's going to collapse, man. If you got big stakes in these companies, you better run. Even if you have to divest yourself on a gradual basis, get out. So let's look. Moderna over the last month is down 37%. That's $91. Now, today it was up. First time in a long time. But over the last 5 days, it's down almost 12%. But today was up 1.5%. Now, since it's a one-trick pony, the swings are major. Okay. Pfizer was up today just slightly, and yesterday just slightly, but that too, it too. Let's look it up. I had it prepared, but of course, there's so many different screens open here. Very interesting conversation. So I wanted to, and it's only coming to you because the folks on Hotwire, a gracious lot, not only do they pay for the subscription, but they say, hey, you got to release this to everybody. So we're doing it. And our guests, too, who spend time with us, free of charge, of course. We don't pay anybody. Now, there are some people who pay folks. Like, how does this guy get all these top-name guys? They pay him. Plain and simple. And so, in fairness to our guest who spent time out of his valuable daily portfolio of time, we release it to more people, the general population, and all of our subscribers on pain.tv to digest. So Pfizer today was up a little bit under a percent, a whole 46 cents. Over the last 5 days, down almost 2%, and over the last month, down 10%, 10.5%. Of course, Pfizer's a $53 stock right now, and Moderna's a $154 stock, $155 stock. So the swings in Moderna are going to be larger and more related to mRNA, gene therapy. We still don't have an approved vaccine on the market in the United States, but that's okay. Don't tell the Supreme Court. They only had hearings about vaccine mandates when we don't actually have an official legal vaccine, but nobody brought that up on the court. We don't want to cloud an already kangaroo court with facts. That could be really dangerous. Anyway, I digress. So we have a good conversation here. And I was at Citi almost 10 years, and billions with a B, billions of dollars moved across my desk. And Mr. Dad was at BlackRock and other places. Well, I won't spoil the conversation for you. But he's seen the billions move across his desk. Of course, he's helped create billions of dollars in the hedge fund arena. And what he says about Pfizer and Moderna and big pharma stocks is eye-opening, and I think we're on the edge here, out on the edge, ahead of the pack, where I love to be. I love to be ahead of the pack, and I know he does as well. So little winds of change. Let's cut this loose. You guys tell me what you think. And the folks that are on Hotwire, we appreciate you guys saying, hey, put it out. And I know our guests do as well. And we're going to be doing a lot more things on the Pain.tv app and Pain.tv. So as I say to you folks many times, take care. God bless.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, What's up, Mr. Dowd? How's it going?
Going well. Good to hear you live.
You're all the way out in the other side of the world, man. Maui, Hawaii.
Living in the most remote island chain in the world.
It's beautiful out there, man. I was out there a number of times. My buddy runs a newspaper out there. We started together in journalism out here, and he's been out there for a long time. And great place, man.
Great. Where does he live? Oahu?
No, he lives on Maui. He lives down Lahaina. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I'm in Wailea, so he's west side. I'm south side.
Right. Well, it's all nice.
Yeah. No. The reason why it's funny, like people live in Lahaina, and or unless you have work to take you someplace, if you live and work in Lahaina or live and work in Kihei, Wailea, I say going to Lahaina is like going to L.A. I make it out once a year because the beaches there are just as good here. So there's no reason to go to Lahaina when you. It's kind of funny that way.
You're originally an East Coast guy, right? Is that right?
Yeah, Boston. I grew up in Boston. Then I went to college in the Midwest, Notre Dame, and then I worked on Wall Street. Lived in Chicago after college, selling bonds for HSBC. Then I went to business school at IU. Went to DLJ, where my eyes started to open up on how things really work. And then I went to the buy side up in Boston, eventually started working for BlackRock, where I managed a growth portfolio that we grew to $14 billion over 10 years and managed through the Great Recession. And then came here with my now ex-wife to reboot the marriage, and she started a business here, and I'm just hanging out, managing after the divorce, what's left of my money, and trying to get some things going here. I'm working with a guy to start a hedge fund. We're trying to raise capital, but so I'm just working for myself. And this whole thing is, you know, because of your. I mean, you said you worked at Citibank back in the day, yeah?
Yeah, not too long ago. You know, it's funny. You worked at DLJ, Donaldson, Lufkin, and Jenrette, and yeah. We used to do work for them over on Park Avenue back in the day.
Yeah, interesting firm. They, you know, when I was there, it's a good thing they sold themselves to Credit Suisse, because yeah, they would have been absolutely implicated in all the bullshit that went down, because there was a direct link of compensation between research and banking. And I was electric utility analyst, so we weren't part, like, we didn't, you know, we weren't part of the dot-com boom. I was there from 97 to 99. And I mean, there were literally, like, you know, research analysts were nothing more than banking whores being paid by the investment bank side of the department. I mean, they're literally, like, if you were a research analyst, if you were the lead research analyst and you helped a roadshow IPO, you got 5% of the IPO, you know, whatever the investment banking department raised and your work for them, you got 5% of whatever it was. Can't make that up.
Yeah. I mean, they were playing a little bit fast and loose when we came in. We had to clean up a mess for them. I had like, back then we had our own firm that did I guess the best way to really compare it is Fusion GPS and things like that. But we were like decades ahead of Fusion GPS, you know, because I left journalism back then, and then we went right, started our own firm doing, we were doing stuff that was basically illegal, is what we were doing. But we were really good at it, and we were working for the feds, and then the word spreads, and whenever there's a problem, they bring you in. And man, I was like, this place is not going to last. you can't run a shop like this. But you know, with junk bonds and everything else they had going, and and they didn't last.
Well, the DLJ was interesting. Like, what people don't realize is that when Drexel went down, DLJ hired the whole freaking junk bond debt.
They took everybody.
They took everybody. So yeah. DLJ became the new Drexel, but nobody knew that.
Yeah, and I mean Drexel went down in a ball of flames too in the late 80s.
Oh yeah, I mean basically the way I think about this, it's been one rolling fraud after another because of the way our monetary system is set up. It's credit creation, excess leads to the party going on too long, and fraud. And it's moved. You know, the .com was corporate fraud. Then the Fed pumped it up. It became bank fraud, and then they pumped it up after the great financial crisis. And now it's become central banking government fraud. That's basically where we are. We're like, the fraud's gotten so big that they now have to basically set up a system where we can't go kill them when people realize the social contract's been broken. Not you and me per se, but when the plebs figure out they've been screwed.
Well, I saw that at Citi, man. I left Citi in 2013, and they put me in charge of keeping an eye on billions of dollars. And from a anti-money laundering standpoint, I ran anti-money laundering in Delaware and part of New York City and all of Chicago and all of L.A. And you go to these people, you say, hey, man, this, you know, it's funny. I just saw a truck go by today, and it was one of the clients we had, and on the side of the truck had said something, and I said, Jesus, these guys were laundering millions of dollars a year. And you take this stuff to the desks in New York City, and you put together massive packages. Like, look, these guys are laundering, I'm figuring $65 million to $125 million a year in money orders and cash and everything. And they say, just keep your mouth shut. Do you know how much money we make off of this account? We'll take any kind of fine. We'll pay it gladly. Because I'm like, well, what am I doing here? Does anybody know what I'm doing here? I don't know what I'm doing here. So,
well, and depending upon where you are in the food chain, you could be the patsy.
Right. So you got to cover everything. You got to cover your ass so that when the feds do come in, you can say, nah. I told these cats, man, these guys were long.
Oh, yeah.
Long, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. No. It's beyond FUBAR where we are as a country, and you know, now they want to extract economic rents from us via perpetual vaccines, and I'm not having it. And I'm doing my best to expose the fraud. And you know, the good news is I think Wall Street's waking up. Hedge fund managers are reaching out to me left and right. Former colleagues. I didn't work at a hedge fund, BlackRock long only, so I didn't make the money they made. But some of these guys got vaccinated. Now they're pissed. And now they're like, we're going to short these fucking things to zero, these motherfuckers. Like, people are starting to smell something went really wrong during the whole EUA clinical trial process. And that it's going to come out. You know, my personal belief is that the Pfizer clinical trial data was fraudulent. They didn't report the all-cause mortality endpoint, which is the gold standard in, you know, drug approval process. That they failed that endpoint, but they rammed it through. That kind of started coming out in September, October, and the biotech community, you know, like talking about it, but really hasn't made the mainstream media that they failed the all-cause mortality endpoint, which you don't get approved if that happens. So, you know, it's becoming a shit show, my friend. It's just becoming a disaster.
Well, we have a couple of folks for the last year inside the FDA, and they've been giving us gems, and we report it to our folks. And there's no doubt they pushed this through. There was more than negative information from the clinicals, or they didn't give all the clinicals, whatever. Then the FDA didn't do their part. The CDC got involved. The White House got involved and started rubber stamping things. You know what I mean? And
yeah,
and they didn't do their somebody or everybody didn't do their homework. Now, we know the FDA has been pressured and was pressured on these emergency use authorizations, so there's no doubt that there's fraud. It's still going on, by the way. These drugs are not the only ones that they keep trying to ramrod through. So, this is coming from people inside who are starting to worry about their own. You know, we just talked about the patsy. They're starting to think, hey, I'm going to be the patsy here. That's what's going to happen. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So, and yeah.
Absolutely. The, you know, the, I don't know if you've been seen some of my tweets, but you know, I look at this exactly like the Great Financial Crisis, where you had a, you know, supposed watchdog, the rating agencies that were the third party. But the problem was, when we started issuing all those CDOs, the money machine became so big. Any one issuer for Moody's or S&P or any of these guys wasn't big enough, so they could be, you know, disinterested party and give the proper rating to the bond. But when these CDOs started kicking in and the volume became so big, they just started rubber stamping them because the money was so big, and they gave AAA ratings to bonds that went down 60%, which never should have happened if they were AAA rated. And so, like, they became corrupted, right? The institutional imperative. Well, I look at the FDA, the NIH, and the CDC the same way. The FDA gets 6% of their budget from pharma. And, you know, this became so corrupted that the third party, you know, because a lot of doctors just, if the FDA says it's good, it must be good. So the fraud couldn't have been perpetuated without the FDA and CDC's help. And that's once the whistleblowers start coming out of there, that's when the house of cards really unravels.
Well, what happens then is their immunity evaporates, and then the whole thing's going to blow
up. Yeah,
then,
right.
Then you're on an Enron model.
Yeah. Well, that might be, everyone says, oh, but they got liability. I go, fraud eviscerates all contracts. That's established case law. I mean, that just gets immediately dissolved. And Pfizer could, it's a $300 billion market cap, $52 billion in revenues. That thing could get back. I mean, I don't know if Pfizer goes to zero. I know Moderna's going to zero. And BioNTech are going to zero. But Pfizer could play the front nine, you know. And back in the dot-com day when the stocks were collapsing, we talked about them. They start playing the back nine, you know, below $18, and then the front nine. I think Pfizer could play the front nine and become like a $5 stock. I mean, maybe zero. Who knows? But, you know.
Well, we've seen it collapsing in the last month. I mean, it's down. It was down again today. Last time I looked, I mean, the market's still open, but it was down percent and a half, and you know, you start losing a percent every day. I mean, it's only a matter of time. And of course, Moderna has taken a big whack in the last month. I think it's 38%, but I didn't look at their stock today. It's probably down again. These mRNA stocks, the word, you know, I say, now you're a Wall Street guy. I say when the folks on Wall Street smell blood, they don't care. They'll make money going. If the stock's going north, they'll make money. If the stock's going south, they can make more money. There's no allegiance to Pfizer and Moderna. You know?
No. The only people who are going to get hurt are the long only Fidelities and all those people who can't go short, because, you know, that's their game, long only and relative to an index. But I'm trying to appeal to their common sense. Like, what you're long are vaccine mandates and fascism. So for your own well-being, you might want to, you know, sell these stocks from a moral standpoint. I've put that out on Twitter, but, you know, we'll see if any of them look. You know how Fidelity PM, if the chart looks good, they own it, and then if it rolls over, they're out. Like you said, no allegiance.
Well, I look at Moderna right now. It's down 5%. It's Friday afternoon. It's down 5%. So that's let's see, 1 month. Now they've passed the 40% precipice for the last month, and that's
yep.
And they were riding high, brother. You know that they had it going on, man. They were, where were they at? They were 240 or something like that. Now they're 150.
Yeah. So how do you want to do this? You want to do like an hour or so?
We're doing it right now.
Oh, it's live. All right.
No, we're not live, but I mean, I just threw the tape on, and, you know, fucking bullshit, and we'll just bullshit. We're already doing it.
All right.
We're rolling, man. We're rolling.
you know, let me just, you know, for people who don't understand what you and I used to do,